Welcome to Food for Thought Podcast, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. Today's episode is Learning by Heart, the Act of Memorization. Before we begin, my name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and on social media. You can find my books wherever books are sold. And of course, you can join me in my online cooking classes and on our vegan trips around the world. This podcast, Food for Thought, is possible because of support of listeners like you. And you can join other supporters by going to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau. Become a supporter today at your chosen level. Thank you in advance for supporting, for subscribing, and for listening to Food for Thought. A lot of you who listened to the episode 50 Ways to Create a Meaningful Life wanted to hear more about some of the 50 items on the list. And I've gotten a lot of requests to hear more about one in particular. I get requests to hear about all of them, and I feel like we've been covering them. But the one that people are asking about more than others, interestingly, is my suggestion in that 50 ways I create a meaningful life to memorize something, anything, a poem, a literary passage, a speech, a prayer, a philosophical treatise, whatever is meaningful to you. It is one of the most meaningful things I do, and I will explain why. On this podcast, you hear me talk a lot about language and words and literature and writing, all of which I love. And I know many of you do as well. But remember, you're listening to a podcast. You're listening. I'm speaking, and you're listening to me speak. And in fact, that is one of our oldest forms of communication, of storytelling, of transmission of information, of poetry, oral speech. I've spent a lot of time talking about the history of English and the etymology of many words in English, but writing is an incredibly new technology. And it is just that. It's a technology. It's an invention relative to, compared to, the acquisition of speech. Speech is natural for us as Homo sapiens, as human beings. Writing is taught and requires tools. The goo-goos and gagas of babies, right, is the natural Homo sapien impulse to move our breath, our larynx, our tongue, our lips, all of which enable us to speak. And that's one of the distinguishing features of humans. And while we need to be taught how to read and how to write under normal circumstances, no baby needs to be taught how to speak. Birds gotta fly, fish gotta swim, humans gotta talk. That's the way of things. Speech is social. We learn to speak looking at each other's mouths and faces. We learn speech patterns that way, and we learn how to listen. Today, we have many distractions pulling our attention away. We always have. We're human beings. We always have had distractions, but let's just say today we have probably more than others at any other time. And it has negatively impacted our ability to really listen, to really understand, and to remember. We multitask. We speak without thinking. We hear without comprehending. And we let words wash over us without letting them penetrate our thoughts, our memory, and our hearts. And I'm not talking about facts. I'm not talking about not allowing facts to become memorized. And I'm talking about stories and poems, narratives, either true or fictitious, in prose or verse, designed to interest us, to amuse us, or to instruct us. Now, historically, we humans relied on narratives being passed down orally for thousands of years for that instruction, for that amusement, for that interest. Oral tradition is a form of human communication whereby we receive, transmit, and preserve wisdom, knowledge, art, ideas, and cultural material from one generation to another. And this has been done for thousands of years through songs, ballads, chants, or folk tales. So when I'm talking about memorizing something, this is what I'm talking about, and you already do it. You can recite and recall nursery rhymes and jokes and, of course, the lyrics of many songs, and you can easily memorize them because of what they all have in common. mnemonic devices that help us remember rhythms, rhymes, repetition, alliteration, etc. And we'll talk about that. But aside from songs we kind of naturally memorize because we want to sing along, we don't really take the time to memorize and recite poems or speeches or literary passages, not really anymore. Now, there was a time when recitation held an official slot in the school curriculum around 1875 to about 1950 in the US and in the UK. And this was often done to foster a lifelong love of literature, to boost self-confidence through a mastery of elocution, to strengthen the brain through exercise, not to mention, especially in the UK, to help purge the idioms and accents of quote-unquote lower class speech. So that was a thing too. But while many of us naturally remember nursery rhymes and songs from our childhood that are imprinted on us, most of us have grown up in a time when memorization and recitation of texts in school were not required of us unless you were in, you know, the choir or theater. I still remember much of Act Two, Scene Two, the balcony scene from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. I learned it in high school, and I can still do most of it because I made an effort to learn it, and I have just been able to hold on to it. And in graduate school, my Chaucer professor required each student to memorize and recite to her the prologue of the Canterbury Tales. It was nerve-wracking. I think I read some of it on a podcast here at one point. That was embarrassing. I should probably see about taking that down. but it was nerve-wracking because we had to learn it in Middle English. But it was a challenge I really loved, and I still remember most of it. I need a little prompting to really run with it, but I remember most of it, and I was really grateful for that challenge. Once something is in your bones, it's just hard to shake, and you already know this from songs you've memorized, right? Since then, since grad school, I mean, even before then, I've always kind of memorized different passages and poems I love. David's done the same thing. I have passages from when I was in high school that I loved, that I made a point to memorize. And I've always kind of been inclined to do that, especially someone who just loves literature and poetry. And David especially. David is a huge poetry lover, more than I am, for sure. David reads books of poetry from cover to cover. He knows poets like it's nobody's business. I mean, he is a poetry lover. And so he, too, is interested in not only, again, reading poetry more than I do, but he has memorized many poems as well. And last year, many of you have heard me talk about this a number of times. I set out, last year, 2 years ago, to memorize the Tao Te Ching, Stephen Mitchell's translation of the Tao Te Ching. I'm about halfway through, and I have memorized and continue to memorize favorite poems and philosophical passages. So it's something that I'm inclined toward, but it takes an effort and a decision and an intention. And, you know, to be clear, more than that, memorizing text has been a significant part of my work. If you've ever seen me speak, you know that I tend not to use notes. It's rare when I do. Rather, I memorize the talk I'm giving before I give it. And that's one of the things that that adds a lot of stress before I travel to speak, and traveling isn't going to happen for a long time for speaking engagements, and not even sure we'll go back to the way it was, just in terms of being able to reach large audiences online without having to travel, which is not a bad thing. Of course, being able to connect in person and hearing people speak in person is powerful, and I'm someone who loves that as well. So we'll get back there, but I just don't know if it's going to be as regular a thing as it has been in the past. The point is, I have always been a speaker who prefers to memorize my talk before I give it. And it adds a level of self-imposed stress, but I just prefer it, and I think it's a better experience for the audience. In memorizing the talk I've written, I can just work with it and mold it and shape it and improve it all the time. And I can hear the rhythm of it as I'm practicing it, and it enables me to create a story and a narrative and take my audience on a journey. And it forces me to make sure my points are clear and succinct when I'm memorizing and practicing. So that, for me, are some of the benefits of when I memorize my own talk. And I just think it's more enjoyable. I think it enables the audience to be more engaged with the words, because that's the point. Not with me necessarily, but with the words. And it just makes it more, well, more memorable when I memorize, I think, for the audience. And the reason we memorize, I mean, there are so many benefits to memorizing. I can name some obvious ones. I mean, obviously, most experts will tell you there are benefits of memorizing text, whether it's your own or someone else's. It helps you focus. I mean, it takes so much brain power when you're memorizing something, and it really forces you to think only of the text you are working on. That's all you're focused on. And how wonderful is that? I don't know about you, but as I have gotten older, I am rejecting multitasking more and more. It is so stressful to constantly be in many different places in my head at once. It's so much less stressful and so much more relaxing to focus completely. Well, relaxing in the sense that you're focused completely on one thing, but it is energy sucking. It takes so much energy, but I like it because then at the end of it, I have something really to show for it. So it helps you focus. Certainly memorizing helps stave off memory decline. It keeps your brain fit. It keeps it active. This might sound obvious, but memorizing helps the brain remember, right? It's worth saying that by virtue of memorizing something, your brain becomes more receptive at remembering. So memorizing exercises your brain, giving it strength to retain more information. Memorizing teaches you techniques like alliteration, cadence, tone, timbre, inflection, emphasis, rhythm, and rhyme, all the beauty of speech teaches you all those techniques. You really hear them more than when you're just reading something. A working memory is better for creativity. It's better for literacy. It's like kind of awesome when you can recall a quote from a poet or a philosopher to help make your point. So you just have this heightened sense of literacy and creativity. That's just the best way I could describe it. And that's been one of the most meaningful aspects of memorizing for me. Aside from just the sense of accomplishment you feel, I've found that memorizing text enables me to understand the words so much more. They become my own. I internalize them. I embody them because I have to make meaning of them in order to imprint them on my memory, right? When you memorize a poem or a passage or of a speech or a text you love, you take the poem inside of you. You take it into your brain chemistry, if not your blood, and you just know it and experience it at a deeper level than if you simply read it off a page or screen, right? I mean, we call it learning by heart. And if that doesn't make the connection, I don't know what else to say. When we talk about memorizing, we talk about learning by heart. And it's also fun. I really love choosing the works that I want to recall again and again. So you may choose to memorize a poem or a passage because you love that poem or passage, and you just love the way the words sound, and you love the alliteration, and you love the rhythm, and you love the rhyme, whatever. That's absolutely great, right? Whatever your motivation is for choosing whatever work you choose or works. But I also choose works that I can recall again and again because it reinforces those ideas in my own brain, right? So it goes without saying that you're going to choose the works you appreciate or gain pleasure from or gain wisdom from. So discovering them and searching for them, that's part of the joy, as is being able to recall them on a whim. And that's the other side of the coin here. It's not just the act of memorizing that I find valuable and meaningful, right? For all the reasons I just named. It's the act of recalling something that I've memorized for pleasure, or to illustrate a point, or to strengthen an argument, or to simply accessorize and beautify and adorn an idea. Now, I could say, I love being with animals, or I could say, I think I could turn and live with the animals. They are so placid and self-contained, quoting Walt Whitman, right? So I can recall, I can pull the wisdom and beauty of the words of others to strengthen that point or to beautify that point, to adorn that idea. It's not to say that me just saying I love being with animals isn't valid, but there's just something really beautiful and validating to draw in and pull in other people's words, especially when those words are beautiful, when those words have been coupled in a way that adds so much pleasure and wisdom. And more than that, I use recalled passages to console myself and to console others, right? Recalling these texts adds resonance and history and poignancy and beauty. I keep saying beauty, to whatever I'm trying to convey. I could say, listen, do what you need to and the rest isn't yours. And that's true if I'm giving advice to someone, and it's lovely. Do what you need to and the rest isn't yours. Or let's just say I say it like that. But I love also being able to recall a quote from someone from 2,000 years ago and say, you know, as the Tao says, do your work and step back, the only path to serenity, right? So just recalling the wisdom of an ancient work just cements and grounds and validates my thoughts. And again, elevates those thoughts as well, because there's just a poignancy and a beauty to them. And frankly, I just think it's a really healthy, energizing, exciting way to spend my brain power, turning off and tuning out external noise, even if that noise is music or an interesting interview or a podcast or a conversation. I listen to podcasts. I listen to music a lot, but it's nice to just spend my brain power, well, on my brain power and not listening to something outside of me. So there's a time and a place. I love listening to podcasts if I'm getting ready. I'll listen to podcasts. I'll listen to music, what have you, doing cooking or something. But it's nice to also just turn all that off and just go inside. It's nice to be disconnected from technology. It's nice to be just disconnected from my phone or my laptop. Now, that doesn't mean I don't still use that sometimes if I'm memorizing. It's helpful to have the text with me, and I might not have it printed out and in my pocket. I'll have it on my phone, so I'm possibly still connected to my phone in that way. But it's really refreshing to be standing in line somewhere or going for a walk or blow drying my hair or doing the dishes or showering or falling asleep, and not only quieting my mind, because of course that's lovely and necessary too, but actually using that time to recall lines from poetry or words or philosophers that move me, or if I'm in the middle of memorizing them. So either memorizing them or recalling them, to just take that moment and work on that. I mean, I'll tell you, it's a much nicer way of standing in line or, you know, waiting around somewhere, you know, and just looking around and just kind of keeping your head up and not putting your head down at the phone. And inside your head, you're just recalling it or you're memorizing it or you're working on it. You're using your brain, you're working on it, and it's so fulfilling. And it's so much more, I find, gratifying than looking at my phone, because we all are guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. If I'm standing in line, you're like, I'm bored. I'm just going to look at my phone, scroll through Instagram or whatever you do. It's such a waste. I'm going to recall a line, and I mean this. This is spontaneous. There's a line from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations that says, you're afraid of death because you won't be able to do this anymore, whatever this is, right? Meaning that, like, you're so, like, you don't want to die. You want to hold on to your life. All of us are aware of how quickly time passes. And then it's for what? It's because, what are we doing right this moment? We're scrolling through Facebook. So, wow, like, let's spend our time in a way that's just so much more meaningful for us. And again, there's a time and a place. We all do it. but let's maybe balance it more and spend some more of that time doing something that if someone were to say, what do you not want to lose in getting older or in, you know, in contemplating not being here anymore, the answer might be reading beautiful words or reciting beautiful words or experiencing language. I mean, right? I mean, so that is, you know, because what are you going to miss? Facebook? And so you're so afraid of death because you won't be able to do this anymore. I want this for me in my life to be meaningful. And it's not to say that there isn't a time to just be loosey-goosey and not doing everything, but still, how do you want to spend your time? So if you're interested, if you're still with me and you are interested in trying this, how would one go about it? Now, I can share what works for me and see if it resonates with you in terms of how to memorize something. You can find many strategies online, I'm sure, but I'll share what works for me, which turns out is pretty well validated by people who are expert in this field, you know, because these would be very obvious things. And so the first thing I would say is whatever text you decide to memorize, take it in chunks, right? Depending on the work you're memorizing, it's likely to be naturally broken up into phrases or into sentences or into stanzas or paragraphs, even if you start with two lines. You know, I'll tell you this, here's an example. People come up to me all the time or they write to me or they're talking with me and say, yeah, I know, I love that thing you say. What is that thing you say? Don't do nothing. I don't know, you can say it better. What is it? Well, learn it. That's like a really nice short four line, don't do nothing because you can't do everything, do something, anything, right? That's something I say all the time. So learn that. Or it doesn't have to be, you know, my words, but learn, like, you could just start with something short. It doesn't have to be a whole poem, but no matter what, that's going to be broken up. So don't do nothing because you can't do everything, do something, anything, right? So you start with don't do nothing because you can't do everything. Okay, you start there. And then you build and you build and you build until you have all of it. And that's how I do it. I master a phrase, I master a sentence, then I master a second and I add that first one plus that second. Then I master that third one and I add the first, second, and third. And then I get the fourth one. And now I've got a whole stanza. I've got one, two, three, and four. So you just keep building and building. So let's say you're memorizing a poem like Kipling's If. It's a very commonly memorized. It's a poem that is commonly memorized, Rudyard Kipling's If, and it's one that I memorized. You'll be able to see why. It's quite lovely. I've long loved this poem. It's a very well-known poem. David memorized it, and we would go on walks or we'd be sitting and reading, and I'd say, could you recite it? I want to hear it. I love it so much. And I would just ask him to recite it. And then I was like, I need to memorize this poem. Like, I really love this poem. I want to memorize it myself. So I did. And if you look at it on paper, it's four stanzas of eight lines each. And those eight lines are further broken down into kind of two-line units, and it makes it really easy to master. So it's a poem that is often memorized. It's very, very common. So that's what I would say. Just take it in chunks and build on those chunks. Number two, look for mnemonic techniques to help you memorize. Anybody would tell you this. In If, it's the most obvious mnemonic is repetition, because most of the lines start with either if, or they start with or they start with and, but most of them start with if, or and. So there's lots of repetition. There's also alliteration and rhyme. Now remember, alliteration is when there's repetition of the first letter of a word, as opposed to, or a first sound of a word, as opposed to the ending of a word, the way when we think of rhyme. Alliteration is basically repetition of the first sound or letter of a word. So Old English poetry, for instance, didn't rely on rhyme. It relied on alliteration, which was a technique the orator would have used as a mnemonic device. So you have something like, you know, in Beowulf, you have something like, that was their way, their heathenish hope, deep in their hearts, they remembered hell. So you've got lots of H's, you've got lots of TH's, or behavior that's admired as the path to power among people everywhere. Those are quotes from Beowulf, from Seamus Heaney's translation of Beowulf. You can see the path to power among people everywhere. And so those are techniques that orators would use, or the person reciting the poem would use to memorize those lines. And if has it in spades, see how many devices you can pick up here. Listen to this is the second passage of eight lines, and you can hear hopefully the two line units, how it's broken up even further. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn out tools. So you've got rhyme, you've got stress, you've got breaks, you've got emphasis, you've got repetition, you've got alliteration. So use those techniques to help you memorize. And, you know, these days, if there's a poem you pick, you can go online, type in what mnemonic devices are in this poem. And it's probably going to be a poem, I would imagine, that, you know, it's taught in school. You can start there. And so I would imagine you'd be able to find some help in that. But honestly, look for it yourself. Look for ways that you can use mnemonic devices to memorize yourself. So number three, speaking of characteristics of a poem that make it easier to memorize, it might be easier if you start with a poem with a definite rhyme and meter, rather than one that's free verse. Now, you can do free verse, right? You know, because even if it's a passage from a speech or a larger work, it will most likely be in free verse. You can do it. But just a suggestion, if you're starting out for the first time, just to make it a little easier, you might want to start with something that does have like a definitive rhyme and meter. Just might help. Number four is start with a passage on the shorter side. Like, don't start with Beowulf. Right? Don't go memorizing Beowulf or even the prologue to the Canterbury Tales. I think David, one of the poems that he memorized many years ago, I wouldn't say it was the first poem he memorized, but he memorized T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which is like 130 lines. Like, you just don't, it's a difficult poem. You don't want to start with Prufrock, right? So don't start there. But choose one that's going to enable you to feel real sense of accomplishment at the end. So maybe a shorter one, one with definitive rhyme. Number five, I think reading out loud is really important. It's crucial for hearing the rhythm. It's crucial for hearing the melody of the lines, the stanzas, the letters, the words. And it's what will help you memorize a poem or a passage or a speech when you read it out loud. As I keep alluding to, poetry was originally oral, not written. It was meant to be experienced and heard out loud. So practice out loud. And if it helps practice with someone else, you can do that as well. I prefer to practice on my own until I really know the things that I've memorized. And then I'll go to David and, you know, I'll do it with him. And in some cases, when we both know the poem together, we'll kind of both do it together and we'll just trade lines. So I'll start with the first, he'll do the second, I'll do the third, he'll do the fourth. So I like to do that after I've known it really well. And if it was a case where when I was first struggling, I'd say, okay, I think I've got it. And I would do it. And then as I would stumble, he knew what it was too. But it could be something where you go up to your family member or friend and say, I think I know this. Hold the book, look at the poem and tell me how I do. Right. So that can be helpful as well. But doing it out loud is something I would recommend. So that is number five. Number six, I personally have a very visual memory. So this works for me. I do very well seeing the words on the page, because it helps me visualize them and remember them, because I can remember where on the page a word or letter was or where a line was. And it helps me when I'm actually recalling the poem, when I'm memorizing it, I can see it in my head. Now, I think a lot of people are visual learners. You may not be. You may be more of an oral learner, A-U-R-A-L, and you might do better if you hear someone reciting it over and over. So you might want to learn it by hearing others recite it, and you can find examples of that online. However, you could also record it yourself. So you can just read it and use some kind of app on your phone to record you reading the poem or the passage, and then you can recall that, and perhaps that might be a way that you are better able to memorize something. So that's number six, is I have a visual memory. I like seeing the words on the page. That's how I remember. You might have an oral memory, and you can do it by recording yourself and listening to you recite it, or you can listen to someone else do it. But number seven, I would actually say, even if you are a visual learner, listen to recordings of what you're memorizing, because you'll hear the cadence and the rhythm and the rhyme of how someone else reads it. David and I used to have audio tapes of poems. We don't have this anymore. We don't have an audio tape player. But we used to have poets reading their poems. And I know you can find this online now. And it's really interesting to hear how the poets themselves read their own poems. It's pretty cool. I mean, there are some, you can go back pretty far and listen to some early poets reading their poetry. So that's what I would recommend. I think it's another helpful trick to just hear how someone else is reading that. And it could be contemporary poets, obviously, as well, reading their poetry. And I just think it makes it, you could find poets on YouTube, so you can watch a video of them. And so I think it's helpful to, again, just get that text in your bones and to hear how the poets themselves, the writers themselves, read that work or read that work. So that is number seven. Number eight, just keep playing it in your head again and again and again. And that's what I mean when I say that it's just really enjoyable to be in a place. Anywhere you are, you have got this thing in your head and you can recall it. And it's just so challenging, and it's a game, and it's wonderful, and it's enjoyable. You make it yours, you get it in your bones. It just keep doing it over and over and over. Now, I say over and over and over, take 10 minutes a day to memorize whatever poem or passage you're working on at any given time, right? Just take 10 minutes a day. Say for 10 minutes each day, I'm just going to work on memorizing something. Keep a copy with you at all times. As I said, keep it on your phone. Perhaps have it in the Notes app on your phone so you don't have to go and look for it online, you know, in a browser window. Just keep it on the Notes app on your phone and spend your idle time memorizing and recalling something that you've memorized. So that is what I highly recommend. There are so many benefits to and gifts that you'll experience from memorizing text for children and adults alike. As I said, it is not mandatory in schools anymore, and we can bring it into our own homes and have our children memorize poetry or speeches or passages. I think it's incredibly beneficial. There's a documentary by Ken Burns called The Address. It's a documentary that tells the story of a little school in Putney, Vermont. It's called the Greenwood School. And each year the students are encouraged. It's not mandatory. It's optional. But many students do sign up for this. And they're encouraged to practice and memorize and recite the Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln, of course. And I had been wanting to memorize the Gettysburg Address. You know, it's really short. And that film inspired me to do so. So it's a lovely little documentary. If you need any inspiration for why it's just such a valuable thing to do and for children to do, hopefully it will inspire you to memorize a poem or a passage you love. It's a gift to yourself. It can even be a gift for a loved one, memorizing and reciting a poem, or writing and memorizing a poem and then reciting it to a loved one. It's an incredibly loving thing to do, and it's potentially very romantic as well, but it really is, in the end, a gift to yourself. As always, don't do nothing, because you can't do everything. Do something, anything, for the animals, both human and non-human. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.